What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Caleb Callahan Show. Today, we're going to look at Alex O'Connor and 25 Christians. I like Alex. I like a lot of what Alex has to say. So let's just dive in, and we'll talk through it as we go.
Hi, my name's Alex O'Connor. I'm an atheist and host of the Within Reason podcast. And today, I'm surrounded by 25 Christians who, God willing, might be able to change my mind.
So, who, God willing, might be able to change my mind. I'm going to say this about Alex O'Connor. Again, I like him. I think he's a thoughtful person, but I also think he pretends that he wants to be a Christian more than he does. I think he puts off as if he just wishes there was enough evidence, and if there was, like, he would definitely believe because he wishes the God of the Bible was true. That's not true. And you're going to see in this, we're going to talk about it, somebody raises the question about, they get into the question about, like, did Jesus claim to be God? And like the amount of evidence that he wants for that to be true, like what he's pressing upon this question, like forcing it to do. And then over here, he says he believes in evolution and billions of years and those kind of things. And I'm telling you, the amount of evidence we have for Jesus claiming to be God way far, 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 far out surpasses the evidence we have for evolution, right? So he's not intellectually honest across I would just say across all landscapes when it comes to believing in things. So I think his kind of like, I just wish it, I'm not buying it is what I'm trying to tell you.
My first claim is that suffering makes God's existence unlikely.
By the way, I want to say this. I'm not a fan of the Jubilee show. I think it's honorable what they're trying to do. I like what they're trying to do, but I really don't like the format, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you cannot talk about these kind of things inside of 5 minutes. It's really gotcha moments, right? And I'm not about gotcha moments. I could care less just to argue for argument's sake, just so people could hear me. Like, if we're not arriving anywhere, if we're not going anywhere, I mean, it's not worth the discussion, okay? So I don't like this format, but it is what it is. Let us continue.
How's it going? Nice to meet you.
Why don't you just begin? Why is suffering...
If I lose the run to the chair, I'm walking back to my seat.
Or evil make God's existence unlikely.
I think when confronted with two hypotheses, so atheism, naturalism, or theism, we should ask what we expect would occur under either hypothesis. And then we look at the world, and we see what does actually occur. And what...
Okay, I like that. Right? We look at the worldview, atheism, Hinduism, Muslim, Christianity, and we go, what... throughout that world, inside of that worldview, what would we expect to see in the world? I like that. That's a very good approach, right? And so I'm interested to what he has to say next.
What do we find? We find, I think most relevant here, a system of natural selection, the mechanism by which God apparently chose to bring animals and ultimate human beings into existence.
Okay, so he's already trying to impose upon this Christian, what do we find? Naturalism, right? Natural selection, right? I would go, no, time out. That I don't believe that at all. So let's have that conversation. Right? I don't believe we find natural selection at all. In fact, natural selection is kind of dying. Right? We don't find molecules to man. We don't find non-life to life. Like, we don't find that in the world. Right? You want to start in biology, Alex, which biology, the most we found is variations inside of kinds. We don't see species to species. There's no genetic code being added to anything. Right? We don't find any of these things. The irreducible complexity we're actually finding is showcasing that mutation could not have added new information to something so that it could evolve, right? We don't find any of these things. So no, I'm going to reject that assumption, back up, and let's have another conversation, right? So again, I wouldn't allow somebody to quickly just throw that in there like that because we don't find that, right? And by the way, we're starting in biology. You have chemical evolution, you have cosmic evolution, you have, right? I mean, there's all this other evolution that has to take place before we get to biology, and biology itself is failing the evolutionist, right? So again, I think he's just wrong there to try to apply that assumption. Don't let people do that to you.
A system which is defined by suffering. Survival of the fittest is the same thing as the death and suffering and destruction of the unfit. I'm told the very mechanism that God chose to bring about the human species as the ultimate end of his creation was one that is imbued with suffering such that 99.9% of all the species, let alone animals, that have ever existed on planet Earth have been brutally wiped from existence into extinction.
So you will never win this conversation if you accept that question. Right? The way in which he just posed that question is 1,000% false. He is forcing naturalism upon a creationist worldview, right? He is forcing billions of years upon someone who would reject billions of years, right? And he is saying that over the course of time, billions of years of suffering, look what God has done. Okay, let me try to answer this question. I don't know what he's about to say, but I'm going to tell you this. This is how you answer it. You go, well, Alex, number one, you are imposing a naturalist, secular humanist worldview upon a Christian worldview. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. But don't critique the Christian worldview, right? Don't say you're here to critique Christianity, because what I want to tell you is that God made a world and he made it good. In fact, he made it very good, right? He tells us that. And then in chapter 3, we see the fall of mankind. And with the fall of mankind, we actually see that the world itself becomes corrupted, right? The world itself becomes inflicted with death and disease and all of those things, right? And what God is getting at is God desired to be a king over a kingdom. And he put a tree in the middle of that garden. He said, as long as I'm the king over this kingdom and I rule and you, the creation, align your life to me, multiply, fill the earth, spread my image, take dominion, subdue it. As long as you do that, then everything will be good. But as soon as you don't do that, as soon as you take part of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, what it means to be God and give definition, as soon as you do that, then you're going to enter into man's kingdom, right? And I'm going to show you what it's like to live inside of man's kingdom. And that's what happens in chapter 3. We transfer out of God's kingdom into man's kingdom, and the rest of human history in the Bible, as the Bible tells it, is man living inside of his kingdom, right? That's what it is. And we're being sanctified in our own kingdom so that one day when we get to live with God in his restored and redeemed kingdom, we will know that it is only good for him to be king.
I think that that's less likely on theism. If you assume atheism or materialism, not only do you explain this, you also come to expect it.
So what he does is he says, if you assume atheism and materialism and naturalism, then what I see, right, what I see is what you would expect. But what he's doing is he's starting with what I see and what I think, and then he's working backwards. Right? So yeah, you're going to win that argument every time. And if this guy doesn't call him out on it, it's over. The argument ended. Opening speech, over. Done. You better call him out on the assumption and the way in which he phrased the question.
What is your, I guess, epistemology? How do you know that this is the case?
He lost.
It's less likely, and that, you know, an atheist worldview, a naturalistic worldview would look like the way it is today.
Of course we don't know, but that's why I use the phraseology.
He kind of does, right? He kind of does.
Unlikely. I think that if you were to tell somebody who was sort of in some Rawlsian state of nature, hadn't seen the world, and you said that the world has been created by an omnibenevolent, all-powerful God, what kind of world would that person be imagining? And if you dropped them into the world, if you were given the opportunity to become a wild animal, like in 2 seconds, I was just going to turn you into a random wild animal somewhere on planet Earth. I think you'd probably kill yourself before I had the opportunity, okay. Because you know that the life of these animals is almost defined in terms of their suffering.
I would disagree with Alex. If you drop someone into the world from the beginning of the story, from Genesis 1 and 2, and he understood how Genesis 3 related to Genesis 1 and 2 and beyond, I think they would have perfect understanding of what they see in the world today. Now, if you dropped them into the world right now as we know it, then if they were just looking at suffering and evil, and that's all they looked at, then yes, they would conclude what Alex is trying to get you to conclude. He's a good arguer. But if you're taking more into consideration, I don't think you would conclude that at all. I don't.
I just don't really see how you can justify that claim per se. What I would say is that if we actually take into account the holistic view of the scriptures, which I do think that you have to do, we see that it's actually much more coherent once you acknowledge that evil itself doesn't have ontology. Evil's not a thing. You don't look under a rock and say, there's the evil, right?
Fine by me. So I'm not really talking about evil here, because that's, of course, a moral term. I'm talking about suffering.
Can you distinctualize suffering and evil?
So evil is a moral term. Evil means that something is bad. It's immoral. You need to have a moral ontology for that. Suffering is just any experience that's not wanted when experienced, right? And so even if you don't have a moral objectivism, you can still say that suffering exists. So here's a question. A deer gets its leg caught under the branch of a tree that's fallen over in the wild, and it starves to death in confused agony. Why does God oversee this? And why does God set the natural world up such that events like this occur?
Okay, so he doesn't want to talk about evil, and there's a reason for that, because now all of a sudden you're getting into a realm that he probably doesn't have a good answer for, okay? But that's fine. That's not the question. But what he just asked, why does God oversee this? It's not God's kingdom fully, right? It's not God's kingdom fully. Suffering is a part of this planet. You know why? Because we decided to play God. That's what the knowledge of good and evil, that's what the tree, that's what sin. He doesn't understand original sin. He doesn't understand what the Christian worldview actually teaches, that there is a kingdom and there is a king, and that we have entered into man's kingdom. Man is ruling this kingdom as God preserves it, right? As God preserves it, because if he left, if his preservation left, it would already be destroyed. Right, so he's preserving it, restoring it, redeeming it through his people. And then one day, guess what? The deer will not sit in the forest again and suffer. The lion will lay down with the lamb. When we enter back into God's restored and redeemed order, the things that he doesn't like will not take place. But he doesn't understand the story, the Christian story. And that's what I would press back to him. I would go, look, if you just want to talk about God and suffering, I'm not real sure what we're talking about, because there's a lot of different gods out there. But if we're talking about Christian, the Christian God, because that's the one I believe in. I don't believe in the other ones. I think they're false gods too. But if we're going to talk about the Christian God, let's make sure we frame this up appropriately if you want to criticize the Christian God.
Well, because the ultimate view here is that...
Okay, pause.
That's me.
I don't know where he was going with that. But again, I hear a lot of what he's saying, but my point is he's not talking about the Christian God, right? Or he just doesn't understand the Christian worldview very well, because you have Genesis 1 and 2, Genesis 3, Genesis 4 and on, right? And there's these clean breaks here. God's kingdom, the way he wanted it, good, very good, good, very good, good. Boom, sin, hey, don't do this. You have one law, don't eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Don't play God. I will father you in these things. Don't try to take the fast pass lane to get here, right? That's sin. Don't do it. If you do it, then there's going to be a different kind. You will surely die, and everything around you will, right? Now, God, because he loves us, set forth in Genesis 3:15, the seed of the woman will crush the head of the serpent, right? He's prophesying the future dealing with sin and death, how he's going to deal with it, take it upon himself, right? And then he judges man and judges woman. He frustrates multiplication. Go forth, multiply, fill the earth. But hey, woman, now that you did it your way, guess what? It's not going to be as breezy as it was, because now you're going to have frustration. You're going to have pain in childbearing. You're going to want to rule over your husband. Hey, man, go out and work and keep and subdue and take dominion. But guess what? Now the ground's going to war against you, right? Thorns and thistles and by the sweat of your brow, right? So now the world is broken, not just humanity, right? We had very good. We had God and man. We had man and woman. We had man and creation. All very good. And guess what? All three pillars have been broken. Romans tells us that creation groans over the restoration of it that God is going to bring into the world. So yes, why does a deer suffer in the woods? And why does God oversee it? Because it's not his kingdom. And because God's desire for this kingdom now is to sanctify his people into a restored and redeemed order one day, so that we will know what it is like when we rule over the earth and not God. He needs to get a better understanding of kingdom theology and what God is up to if he wants to talk about the Christian story.